I want to read to you this morning from the Vision magazine, an article written by Swami Ramdas entitled, God, Our Mainstay. If there is one who can always stand by us and on whom we can place complete reliance, that one is God alone. Usually, a man depends upon so many persons and objects of life for help, relief, and security. Very often, such a dependence results in sore disillusionment. At the moment of stress, trial, and necessity, they all fail him. But he who looks to God and makes him his sole friend, protector, and guide can feel always safe, courageous, and happy. It is the experience of many devotees that trust in God at the time of acute crises in their life has brought them instant inner tranquility and outer relief. Such instances are common in the lives of the devotees chronicled in the scriptures of all faiths in the world. To such, God is a living reality. They feel his protecting hand. They realize his presence at all times. They live in the ecstasy of unbroken union with him. When ego is totally absent, when the mind has dissolved itself in the divine consciousness, and all sense of duality and diversity has disappeared, it is now we know that God is the sole ruler seated in our heart, wherefrom he inspires, leads, and controls all our mental, vital, and physical activities. It is now that we become absolutely fearless and remain ever free and cheerful as the child does in the presence of its mother. Verily, God is infinitely more tender and loving than the physical mother. When you have once discovered your filial link and relationship with him, what a wonderful change takes place in your life. How exalted, blissful, and peaceful you become. Your life now flows like the crystal pure rippling river producing the music of eternity. Reliance on God should not take a gross and material form. Dependence on him means primarily inner strength, intrepidity, and assurance, for God dwells in us. He provides for all things. His will is supreme. It works always for the good of all. The heart of a devotee who has placed himself in the hands of God is therefore unruffled, serene, and perfectly at peace, and like the summer sky, no clouds of cares and anxieties cross over it. This state is the one true achievement of life. It cannot be understood by mere hearing or reading about it. When your mind turns inward and loses itself in the infinity and immortality of your real being, then you will know the sublimity of this realization. Yeah, I just found this here. How nice. Go into the world with eyes open to new beauty, with ears open to new sounds, with hands open to new needs, with minds open to new truth, with souls open to a new spirit, and may the Lord go with you. Our Bible reading this morning is one that you're all familiar with. We read it many, many times, but it is always new, and it always has something new to offer. It's from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, beginning with verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light, that was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which was born not of blood, nor of will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. This morning I would like to speak to you on the power to become. This chapter tells about it completely. I also want to read to you from a book that was published in 1910. It's wonderful to get revelations from God, and they say that there are three ways that you can determine whether or not the revelations you receive are hallucinatory, figments of your imagination, or whether they are the real truth that comes from God. One is that another God-realized soul verifies it. The other is that you find it in the scriptures or in some other way that is verifiable. And the third is that it becomes prophecy fulfilled. This is a tremendous book. It's my daughter Barbara gave it or is loaning it to me to read. And it's just full of wonderful truth and surprises. And it's entitled The Apocalypse Unsealed. It speaks first of the visible, sensuous world. And the first one is the perception of images. The second one is faith and psychic groping. Now, these first two are matters of opinion and illusory knowledge. The second is entitled the intelligible, supersensuous world. And this has to do with philosophic reason and direct cognition. And it has to do with wisdom and true knowledge. The first of these degrees covers the whole field of the inductive physical sciences, which are concerned with investigating the phenomena of external nature. The second degree embraces exoteric religion and all phases of blind belief. And these two degrees, pertaining to the phrenic or lower mind, comprise all the knowledge available to those whose consciousness does not transcend the illusions of the material world. The third degree relates to speculative philosophy, which seeks to arrive at first principles by the effort of pure reason. The fourth degree is the direct apprehension of truth by the lucid mind, independently of any reasoning process. And these two degrees, pertaining to the noetic or higher mind, represent the field of knowledge open to those whose consciousness rises to the world of spiritual reality. Elsewhere, Plato speaks of the matic state, which he describes as a kind of madness produced by a divine release from the ordinary ways of men. I'm sure that all of you know that when we use the word exoteric, we are speaking of that which is outside of ourselves. And when we speak of the esoteric, is that which is to be found within ourselves, within our own hearts, within our own consciousness. The exoteric scientists and religionists rely on the physical senses, the psychic emotions, and the intellectual faculties, as these are in the present state of human evolution. And while the scientist somewhat enlarges the scope of the senses by employing the telescope, the microscope, and other mechanical devices, the religionist puts his trust in the mutilated, and I want you to look at that word, mutilated, records of suppositional revelations received from the remote past. But the esotericist, refusing to be confined within the narrow limits of the senses and the mental faculties, and recognizing that the Gnostic powers of the soul are hopelessly hampered and obscured by its imperfect instrument, the physical body, devotes himself to what may be termed intensive self-evolution, the conquest and utilization of all the forces and faculties that lie latent in that fatal essence within himself, which is the primary source of all the elements and powers of his being, of all that he is, has been, and will be. By gaining conscious control of the hidden potencies which are the proximate cause of his individual evolution, he seeks to traverse in a comparatively brief period of time the path leading to spiritual illumination and liberation from terrestrial bondage, rushing forward, as it were, toward that goal which the human race as a whole, advancing at an almost imperceptible rate of progress, will reach only after eons of time. His effort is not so much to know as to become, and herein lies the tremendous import of the Delphic inscription, "Know thyself," which is the keynote of esotericism. For the esotericist understands that true self-knowledge can be attained only through self-development at the highest possible sense of the term, a development which begins with introspection. and the awakening of creative and regenerative forces which now slumber in man's inner protoplasmic nature, like the vivific potency in the ovum, and which, when roused into activity, transform him ultimately into a divine being, bodied in a deathless, ethereal form of ineffable beauty. This process of transcendental self-conquest, the giving birth to oneself as a spiritual being, evolving from the concealed essence of one's own embryonic nature, a self-luminous, immortal body, is the sole matter of the apocalypse, as it is also the burden of the four evangels. But whereas in his evangel, Jonas has been content to follow the form of statement found in the three synoptics, in the apocalypse he is given an almost complete outline of the psychophysiological process of regeneration, or as he calls it in his evangel, the birth from above. Now, we have discussed many times this tremendous change which takes place in each one who has the courage to be a soldier of God, who has the courage to pick up his cross and follow him, even unto death, in order that he might become his disciple. We shy away from this word called death, but there is no such thing as death. There is only a state of change, a deeper sleep, the putting aside the old garment and putting on a new one. You awake to the dawn of a new incarnation, a new life, and you proceed from where you left off the night before or the life before. And it goes on and on until your body becomes completely filled with the light of God, where you are lifted up above all duality, where you live in that immortal state, and you have earned that crown of eternal life. You think that that is impossible? Not at all. It is the most possible thing in the world. There are many in this group that have been going through spiritual experiences. I understand what they go through. It is not easy. They are misunderstood, because it is a strange experience when the soul is lifted up by God and you are drawn into the inner realm of your being, and you are made to do strange things, because don't forget that you are on the battlefield between the two forces which are forever at war within you. That magnetic force, the good thief, which is eternally trying to take you to the realization of your oneness with God, and the bad thief that is trying to keep you into the world of the senses. You do many strange things. You may appear strange. People feel strange around people who are going through this experience. And when they go through this so-called death state, they're still able afterward to function in the human body, because they arise from the dead, so to speak, in their consciousness. But just like you go to a funeral and you stand before a corpse, or you sit in the congregation and the casket is up in front of you, you have a strange feeling about death. And that is because you do not understand it, because there is absolutely nothing to fear. There is a world beyond this world, just like this world, only it is a light world. And it is a beautiful world, and it has places in it, just as we have hospitals and prisons, and we have all of the good places, and for those of the elite, we have special places like kings and queens, and sometimes saints, although usually they stay in the lowliest places. It depends on where they are and what their environmental training has been. But so they have these same things in the upper world. God gives us life, and he alone has the power to take that life from us. There is much going on now in the way of conversation about euthanasia. Whether or not one, if he is in tremendous pain, has the right to say that he doesn't want to live anymore, has control over his life. In one way he does, because he has free will. But if he does such a thing, then he must realize that in taking his own life, he has committed a terrible, the worst sin, in fact, if you want to call it a sin, against God, against life itself. So he must go back to the beginning of his humanness. And that's why we have abortions. That's why we have miscarriages. That's why we have mothers who long for children and don't have them, because perhaps in another lifetime their acts brought this particular thing upon them. And so they want another chance. And so these chances have to be taken time after time after time until finally you come to the same state and you face the same decision that you had to face when you decided to do away with what you call your life. But you cannot kill life, you see, because God is eternal and He is light. He is life. He is intelligence. He is power. His is the only presence in the world. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So in the beginning we have God as pure spirit. And then He manifested Himself as God the Father. And He married God the Mother in the form of nature. He projected His Spirit into the womb of nature. And in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Because as humans, we comprehend not because of the false training that we have had, that we are truly God in human form, that it is His light. His life, His intelligence, everything, His power, His will that motivates us and enables us to live in this world. Then there was a man sent from God whose name was John. Now in the human consciousness, the human ego consciousness, when man starts to develop on the spiritual path, he starts to get premonitions. Sometimes he has hunches, as we call them. He knows something is going to happen or that it isn't going to happen. He has some fear within himself. And so this is called intuition. And John the Baptist came to teach us about intuition. Don't forget that Jesus said that the Bible was written in parables. And behind each parable is a kernel of truth. And when you have graduated into the higher realms of the spiritual world, then that truth is revealed to you. So that which came in the beginning to baptize you was that intuitive force, that still small voice which comes and which goes. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. But it says that John the Baptist was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. What is that light? That is the Christ in you. And you will remember that he said that he was not worthy to touch the feet of the Christ. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. Jesus was the carpenter of the universe, and he lived in the body not only of one man, who lived 2,000 years ago. But he lives in the bodies of every single one who is present and not present the world over. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. He is within you, and you don't realize he is there because your mind has been so definitely programmed to realize and to know that there was only one Son of God, Jesus the Christ, who was born 2,000 years ago. Don't forget he was born the Son of Man. He became the Christed One, the newborn in God, only after the crucifixion. So that's when we should be celebrating his birth, when that first Christ consciousness is born within each and every one of you. But as many as received him, and this denies what we have been taught in the exoteric sense, but as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. That is definite proof that he was saying, I am not the only one. To all who receive this Christ consciousness, to them is given the power to become the sons of God. And it says, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Because that birth, that second birth that everyone speaks of in the exoteric sense, happens within yourselves. You have the most tremendous power that is in existence within you, because that power is the power of God. It can move mountains. It can change your life overnight if you will only take hold of it and dedicate yourselves totally to God. If God is everything there is, where is He not? And again, as I have said many times before, if God created the world and nothing was created except by Him, then where does Satan come in except as a figment of man's imagination? It is pure delusion. Yet we have given Him form and substance through our very faith, our belief in Him, which should be given only to God. I do not believe in concentrating on sin, on hell, fire, and damnation, and the devil. I do not believe in concentrating on the mark of the beast, on evil. I believe in concentrating upon God alone. God alone. My form, as the form of every spiritual teacher, is here only to serve God and God in you. It is not to be deified in no way. Whatever comes to me in that way, I give to Him, because He is the soul, everything of my being. And I can tell you that if you will seek Him first, above all things, that all of the desires of your heart that you ever have will be taken care of. You will be lifted up into the heaven of your own being. Because did He not say that God and the kingdom of heaven are within? And that He would come a second time out of the cloud of heaven within your own consciousness? That happens. Not outside. It may happen. Because to God all things are possible. And when it speaks of all of the earthquakes, man has given what is in the exoteric sense in the Bible such power. The belief in it is so strong that it is happening, but he, man, has made it happen through the destructive uses that he has made of the power within himself. He has discovered the atom bomb and has exploded it in the bowels of the earth, in the water, in the ocean, in the sky. And then he wonders why the air which he breathes can't contaminate. He throws his debris in the river and he wonders why the rivers are no longer sparkling with fresh water. And he is drinking water now that is not fit to drink because it has to be doctored so much to take care of the vile things that have been put in it. Man has brought this upon himself. He's built a cloud around this hemisphere. And the sun can't get through, nor can the fresh air that we used to breathe. Can it be changed? Is it too late? No. Not if each and every one of you put God first. It is very interesting to me to speak to people about God, especially in close encounters, because some hang on every word. They're so tuned in. And whenever I speak to them, when I say I am using that perpendicular pronoun, which is God within myself, because I am merely the witness of what He says, thinks, and does through this form which He made. And some are entranced, and they are lifted up, and some of them cry. And others cannot keep their attention fixed. When the day comes when you can sit before a spiritual teacher and be so engrossed in listening about the truth of God that nothing can deter you and you feel upset if something upsets you, then you have arrived at the beginning of the ladder on which you can climb to get your own God realization. You have the power of wit. You have the power of speech. You have the power to see. You have the power to hear. You have the power to taste. You have the power to feel. All of these powers you have within yourself. And you must think, what can I do to make my life better? There is one great thing that you can do, and that is to learn how to go into deep meditation within yourself. Not just to pray on an extraneous basis, just like you hear in some of the churches when they say, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, and so on. And you can scarcely determine what the words are. Do you think that those prayers reach God? No way. No way. You have to pray to Him in the silence. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. I remember a story that I read. It was way back in 1934. It was written by a man who had been in prison. He had committed some terrible crime, but there was a great soul in prison who changed this man's life. And he took on a new name. And he took the name Star Daily. Now, many times have wondered if it wasn't because he'd been taught the method of meditation, of looking for that spiritual eye, that single eye in the center of his forehead, and that he saw that star daily. And anyway, he became very famous throughout the United States, and he wrote many books and gave many lectures. But there was one story that I remember reading that he told about a dream that he had had 3 times a year for 4 consecutive years. And then he had it in April of the 5th year. And don't forget that this was long before the atom bomb was discovered and used. And he said it was as though he wasn't on Earth, but he was in another realm, which of course he is not. And he was floating above the Earth. And as he looked down upon it, he saw a tremendous desert waste. There didn't seem to be anything growing on that waste. And as he looked in the distance, he saw a group of people running. It was sort of like a dark cloud in itself, or they were. And they kept running and running and looking fearfully behind them. And as they passed where he was floating above them, he looked back and he saw another dark cloud coming and overtaking them, covering them totally so that he saw nothing. Finally, the cloud disappeared into the distance. As he looked again, he saw that there were many lying on the earth. But also he saw, here and there, bodies sitting in half lotus posture, or not half lotus posture, full lotus posture, in absolute stillness. And these were the ones, he said, whom God told him had conquered the desire to breathe. My guru many times said, breathlessness is deathlessness. Breath is the cord which ties the soul to the body. And by a very simple technique, which most of you have been taught, that is in Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, you learn to watch your breath. And as you become aware of the fact that you are breathing, at first rapidly perhaps, but not in any way trying to control it. Just watch the fact that you are breathing. Become aware of it. Your breath gradually slows down until you are not breathing at all. And that stops all the functioning in your body. And you sit in a state of suspended animation. Nothing that happens above you or around you in the sense of the atomic bomb or any power like it can harm you. Now, what about the earthquakes? Certainly, we're experiencing them all over the world. It seems that the time has come, and there's been a book published, We Are the Earthquake Generation, and it was published previously, and since the Mount St. Helens eruption, there is a new book with that included in it. It's a very fascinating book. Now, you can be filled with fear at all that's happening, or you can rush to God on the wings of prayer and meditation, and be secure in Him no matter what happens or where you are. And don't forget that wherever you run, God is. Wherever you run, whatever your fate is going to keep up with you or take up with you. And this is proven time after time. A whole airplane full of people crashes, and one person is saved out of that airplane full of people. Why? It wasn't his time to go. So we can't run. We have to stay and face reality. And we have the power and the peace and the trust and the faith in God to do that, if we will only use it. Let us stop wasting our time. Let us use this tremendous power that God has given us within ourselves to learn how to truly live. I don't teach a religion, although it is said that religion is to teach you how to contact God. With the few simple techniques that I give you, you might call it that. But we go beyond religion. We don't concentrate on anything but God. We set our human goals for one purpose alone, and that is that we may bring forth the special gifts that God has given us. Let us make something beautiful for God, as Mother Teresa. And her life is a living example of that. Let us be willing to give not just one moment or 1 hour of our lives a week or 2 hours, but let us give him every moment of our lives as he has given it to us, in conscious union with him, in conscious communion with him. Realize that to him is given all power over heaven and earth if you will only contact that Christ within yourself. He is wonderful. He is beautiful. He is all that exists in all this world. And all that seems evil is only delusion. We can always find excuses not to do what we should. But if we will sit down and examine ourselves and use our willpower instead of, I won't do this and I won't do that. You can use that constructively too if you refuse to have what's offered to you sometimes and resist so-called temptation. But if you do succumb to temptation, remember that you have written your own law upon your own forehead with your own hand. And for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. And so for every wrong thing that you think, say, or do, you are going to pay for it. And nobody has done it to you. You have done it to yourself because you have refused to put God first. You do not realize the beauty, the truth, the wonder of living in God. You punish yourselves. Sometimes you stay in a situation that is unbearable to you. It destroys you. And yet you have the power to move out of it, to begin a new life if you only will. What it takes is faith and trust. Not in things, not in people, but in that supreme power of the universe and in the Christ in you. Every day surround yourself with his beauty, his wonder, his light. Feel his peace. Open your heart to his love. That is the cave where you may go and worship him. And you may go into the mountain of your own being. The thing that Jesus did when he went up into the mountain to pray. He went into that mountain of higher consciousness in order that he might contact God and find out from that source of all things what to give to his people. He fed the multitudes with a few loaves of bread and a few fishes. He changed water into wine. Do you think that he did these things literally? They can be done. When I was in India, I heard a story about Swami Ramdas, whose article I read you this morning, about his taking a trip one time on a train, and when he reached his destination, there were thousands of people there to greet this holy man. Somebody gave him a big bag of rock candy. He took one bite and he passed it around. And it went from hand to hand, and all of the multitudes of people that had come to meet him and returned to him with some candy in the bag. Now, how do you account for that? I have seen many miracles in my journeys to India. Things that are seemingly unbelievable, but believe me, I have seen them, and I have gone back a second time to make sure that I wasn't fostering any delusion within myself. You have such power within yourself to use things, to do things, to use your will constructively, to make of yourself Superman, to be examples for the world. Just think, if each of you were to contact just one person, and through the tremendous light that shone within your own being, you could inspire that individual to seek God first within himself and to bring him into the fold, soon we would have an army of people. And would you suffer from it? No, you would gain. You would gain because you had reached out. You had been a witness for Christ. You had given of that tremendous love which you will find within your own heart, within your own beings, to somebody else. And just because you don't have the whole ocean alongside of you from which to dip your cup, you have only a small stream. Don't fail to fill that cup with whatever you have, because in doing so, your own cup of water will grow. It's beautiful. It's water, wonderful. And it's what it says in here. But as many as received him, how many really want to receive him? The reason they don't, many times when they change from the exoteric to the esoteric, is because they have fear within themselves. And that's natural. It's understandable. Because you don't need know what to expect. And when you're told that you must die for Christ, because to pick up your cross and follow him, your cross is your body, is to emulate him in every detail. But what dies is the human ego, the son of man, that false part of yourself which keeps your consciousness bound in the senses. And what springs forth, what rises from the grave of this so-called death, is the Christ in you, the little one, the new one in God. And just as it takes 3 days or three separate periods of time to descend into the hell or the subconscious mind of your own being, so also it takes 3 days or three separate experiences to ascend into the heaven of your own being. And you do not become the fully Christed one, heir with Christ, one with God, until you have conquered the 10 subtle qualities of the mind, in which are held the memories of that which the senses enjoy. So you must keep on until you go through that sixth center, which is the center of Christ consciousness. You have 7 spinal centers. The sixth is that center of Christ consciousness. I am the way, the truth, and the light. Nobody can go to the Father except through me, through that state of consciousness. Then you go to the Father, that one who created all things, including the Christ. And don't forget that he himself said, I of myself am nothing. And yet we worship him and forget the Father God. It is my Father who doeth the works. He put forth this Christ consciousness, this Christ power, this Christ intelligence, this Christ will, this Christ everything. It is that which is in every atom of space and in every form that walks the earth. And until we realize that, until we find that within ourselves, until we have the courage to give up the things that destroy us, the people, the associations that destroy us, the habits that destroy us, and put our attention on God and be what we should, obey his commandments, we will not ever get out of our troubled situation. And we will still go on wandering in the dark, 1 minute up, 1 minute down, 1 minute filled with joy and happiness because something that we want has been given to us, and the next minute down in the dumps because it has been taken away from us. And that will continue as long as you are in a human state of consciousness. It will continue from now until eternity. It will never get better until you change. And only you, with God's help, can do that. Any spiritual teacher who stands before you can inspire you, can give you the truth of their own experience, who can give you all that they have, but you are the one who has to take what they give and take it inside of yourself and make it work. And you start in by letting go of the thoughts of the things that you want to get rid of and putting your mind on God and the things that you want to attain in him. Start seeing the good in people. Stop talking about them. We have the power of speech, and that little cannonball, the tongue, can do more damage in 5 seconds than an atom bomb. It can destroy a life, a reputation. There isn't a person on this earth that hasn't had some sort of a sin. And that sin, as I've told you many times, denotes just one thing to me, and that's separation from God. Because that idea of separation from God contains all the sins in the world, every one of them. And if you could accept, I and my Father are one this moment, equally with that idea that you have accepted of your separation from God, you would have it made, but you won't do it. You won't permit yourself to. You hang on to the things of the senses. You cause yourself worry and torture. And this is valuable time that could be spent in raising yourselves into something that is superhuman. You can walk the earth, a child of God, completely heir with Christ. And only those who have eyes to see can tell what you have become, because you wear the same body. You have the same habit patterns of dress, of makeup, of eating, whatever. Maybe there have been some changes, but by and large you look the same, and only those who have eyes to see can tell that you have really died to the world. The world has ended within you. The volcanoes have erupted, the earthquakes have happened, the floods have come within your own being. and destroyed all of those forms that you have built in your consciousness, because you've built a whole universe within yourself. And so, when the Christ arises within you, the graves within yourself open up, and those who are meant to will come forth. And this will be a new heaven and a new earth, not only outside, but first within yourself, because everything happens within first and is projected outward. And God proved that when He was, and then He created the heavens and the earth and all of the things in it. I would like to ask you to remember to use this power for your own highest good. To start from this moment on, to think only of God and how you might serve Him. Serve Him in everyone you meet. Love all of the good things in that person. See good in them even when you can't see good in them. And praise even the littlest thing when you can praise it. And you will find that their hearts will open up. That they are sick. The greatest sickness in the world is a desire to be loved and not receiving it. And people search for it everywhere in the human sense. Seldom do they really find what they're looking for. But I tell you, if you will go within yourself and find union with that bridegroom who is the Christ in you, you will know love such as you have never dreamed of in this world. And that love will guide you. It will sustain you. It will provide every single need that you have now and forever after.